This podcast was recorded Thursday, July 23rd at 10:38 a.m. Things might have changed by the time you hear it. Like, maybe it'll be a good idea to arm teachers while also reducing training. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly dive into the deep, dark, and murky waters of Ohio politics. I'm Steve Brown, my usual partner in crime, Mike Thompson, taking a much-needed week off. In case you didn't get it, my introduction just a few seconds ago, poking fun at a bill to let local school districts decide if employees should be able to carry guns inside schools. The bill also says that those people carrying guns would need 26 hours of training. For comparison, that's about 4% of the training required of police officers. So what could go wrong? Anyway, those murky political waters that I was just talking about that we always try to explore got a little sunlight this week thanks to federal investigators. This week, they dropped a bombshell announcement against one of the most powerful people in the state.
We're here today to announce the arrest of Larry Householder, the Speaker of the House of the state of Ohio, and four other defendants for racketeering in relation to what is likely the largest bribery money laundering scheme ever perpetrated against the people of the state of Ohio.
That's U.S. Attorney David DeVillers speaking Tuesday about a federal affidavit linked to this program's favorite show topic over the past 18 months, the nuclear bailout law. It was controversial even before this week and led to a high-profile ballot effort that ultimately failed to make it before voters, but did succeed in prompting accusations of racism and complaints about dark money in politics. Few people anywhere in the world have a better grasp of this nuclear bailout law or House Bill 6. Then State House correspondent Andy Chow. He's been covering it for years at this point. He joins us now. Andy, I think you knew deep in your heart you would never really get away from House Bill 6. It's your destiny to cover it forever.
Yeah, I think you're right, Steve. I think I knew that this was going to come back one way or another.
Where to begin here? So much to unpack. Let's start with, I guess, just so people are approaching this with a good understanding, what exactly House Bill 6 or the nuclear bailout law does, who it helps, and why so many people hated it even before this week.
Sure. So, yep, it's a big sweeping bill, does a lot of things, but essentially it bails out Ohio's two nuclear power plants. It creates subsidies for coal plants that are struggling in the marketplace. It rolls back these pro-renewable energy standards that utilities were required to abide by, and it eliminates these energy efficiency programs that utilities were supposed to follow in order to achieve efficiency. So it does really four things here. When it comes to who it benefits, it definitely benefits First Energy Solutions, now known as Energy Harbor, because it bails out its two nuclear power plants. Without this bill, those two plants were going to close. And then you've got these coal plants that have been seeking subsidies for a while now, and it hurts, and this is why a lot of environmental groups were against it. It hurts these pro-green energy policies that have been around for more than a decade now.
So a lot of well-funded interests behind this effort to pass House Bill 6 or the nuclear bailout. These charges unveiled this week, pretty complicated, but basically they accuse Larry Householder of taking money from an energy company. It's unnamed in the affidavit, but it's widely believed to be First Energy. Also, First Energy Solutions are now Energy Harbor involved. And then the affidavit says that Householder took up to $61 million and then led the effort to pass this massive bailout for those unprofitable nuclear plants. The complaint says the energy company spent $61 million in order to win more than $1 billion in ratepayer subsidies. Diving in a little deeper, a nonprofit group called Generation Now, also really at the heart of this. What is Generation Now and what are they accused of?
So what people might remember from last year is, going online or hearing or seeing commercials paid for by Generation Now, and they were kind of, peppered in throughout the year. At the beginning of the year, it was just talking about energy independence, and then later in the year, it was really calling on voters to really urge their local lawmakers to vote for HB 6. And then when HB 6 passed and people were trying to put a referendum on the ballot, Generation Now was the group that was really pumping a lot of money into the anti-referendum effort. A lot of people said that Generation Now was the group that was blocking the democratic process. If you remember, you know, blocking signature gatherers and all that drama that happened back then. And so really what was going on is Generation Now was the company that we all knew was the company, the dark money group, putting money into the pro-nuclear bailout side of things. It was assumed that it was getting its money from First Energy and First Energy Solutions, just couldn't prove it because it was a dark money group. What this affidavit shows, what these federal prosecutors are saying, is they're connecting the dots that a lot of journalists were trying to connect for the entire year last year, and they were able to do it through phone records and wiretappings and all sorts of things that we journalists don't really have either the power to do or the resources to carry out. They were able to allegedly able to do all these things to really show a direct line between what we assume to be First Energy, First Energy Solutions, all the money going to Generation Now and some other front companies, then filtering through to House Speaker Larry Householder and his associates.
And Householder allegedly using a lot of money to help get allies elected to the House last year in order to get them to introduce and then eventually join the effort to pass this nuclear bailout law. Householder also alleged to have personally profited from this venture in the neighborhood of $500,000 in money that he allegedly took himself for his own personal expenses. He's not the only Capital Square power player charged here. Who else is alleged to be involved?
Well, a couple of other defendants who are charged in this case include Matt Borges, the former chair of the Ohio Republican Party. When he was basically kicked out as chair of the party, he created his own consulting firm, and the big client he was able to get was First Energy and First Energy Solutions. And so he is charged in this alleged scheme as well. Juan Cespedes is a registered lobbyist for First Energy Solutions, and he was a very common face around the State House when HB 6 was making its way through. He was the person that myself and other journalists would go to saying, hey, you know, what's First Energy's push here? Where are they with this bill, and is it going to get through? And then you have Neil Clark, and he is a big-time lobbyist in Columbus. Mm-hmm. He's a very well-known, high-profile figure in the State House. It was actually really surprising to hear that he is charged in all this, because as big of a figure that he is at the State House, he was not known to be a player in all of the HB6 drama that happened last year. And so that's sort of telling. And when you read through the affidavit, you can tell that, you know, he was allegedly behind the scenes pulling the strings. And for somebody who usually does have a high profile to sort of be behind the scenes is something that I think the investigators are sort of pointing to. And then you have Jeff Longstreth, who is Householder's longtime political advisor and, believed to be the person who created Generation Now.
We're recording this show Thursday morning, and as I said, things can change by the time you hear it. But at this moment, Larry Householder is still the Speaker of the Ohio House, even after being arrested. There has not been an indictment filed yet. Any idea if he'll be the Speaker Thursday evening or Friday morning or going into, you know, in a week from now? Are we hearing anything about him resigning?
You know, as my friend Laura Bischoff from the Dayton Daily News always says, is that the one thing that's one of the hardest things to predict at the State House is a leadership battle. And maybe the most unpredictable figure in State House history might be Larry Householder. So if anybody's going to go through these types of charges and still refuse to resign, it would be Larry Householder. At this point, there's no word of him resigning. There is even when he walked out of federal court, reporters asked him if he was going to resign. It was so loud, it was hard to hear if he was saying no or no comment. But at this point, he has not resigned. He hasn't put out any signals to resign. Some sort of weaknesses in the armor that we're seeing is that along with these big figures who are calling for his resignation, like Governor DeWine, Attorney General Dave Yost, the Democrats, the more traditional Republicans, even members of his own team are calling for his resignation, which might maybe sort of signal a turning point in all this.
Just about everyone is denouncing Householder's alleged actions, including Governor DeWine, as you just said. But DeWine says the bailout should stay in place. Let's listen to what he said on Wednesday.
If we would have lost our two nuclear plants, which we would have, I believe, without this bill, It would have meant that we would have had virtually no, very, very little non-carbon generating energy.
Andy, DeWine is really in a tough spot politically here. This law now has a huge cloud hanging over it, right? But it does add carbon-free power to Ohio's portfolio, and it saved a lot of jobs at those nuclear plants that were saved. So DeWine really not in an enviable spot here.
Yeah, and if you go back to when this bill was passed, a lot of people were also saying if it didn't pass, then Ohio and its Republican leadership, and then people could even look at the White House and President Donald Trump, would be tagged with losing two or even three power plants in the year 2019 if nothing was done, because the third power plant being a coal plant that received subsidies indirectly from all of this, or received backing indirectly from all of this. And so right now, it is this tough spot where he says he wanted to see some sort of bill passed that subsidizes these nuclear power plants to keep them open. But if you really dig back into the history of this issue, creating some sort of subsidy program for nuclear power plants, this is an issue that did not have any backing in the past. There were three bills from between 2016 to 2019. There were three bills introduced in the House and the Senate to get some sort of program like this up and running, and there was just no support, never even made it out of committee. When Larry Householder took over as Speaker, all of that changed. And that's what opponents of HB 6 are pointing out, is that on its merits, on its own, they don't believe that a bill like this would get through the State House.
And there is already at least one bill to repeal House Bill 6. As I mentioned above, after the law was passed, there was a bitter referendum effort. The group called Ohioans Against Corporate Bailouts tried to get it before voters, ultimately failed, at least partly because of ads that falsely implied the Chinese military was going to goose step into downtown Columbus and was funding the campaign of the nuclear bailout critics. Have we heard anything from Ohioans Against Corporate Bailouts now that this law is so tainted?
You know, I've reached out to the group's spokesperson, Jean Pierce, several times. We've been able to have conversations, but at this point, they're saying no. The groups that he represented are not really wanting to talk about this issue at this point. It's still very early in the process, though, so who knows what will come of all of this. And I think at this point, they're just kind of waiting to see how the investigation goes and where lawmakers take a possible repeal.
The nuclear bailout, the story that never really goes away. This was a rare show, Andy, lately, in that we did not lead with the coronavirus or any news related to it, since we had this huge political scandal fall into our lap. But we did get big news on the coronavirus front on Wednesday. Ohio is getting a mask mandate. Here's Governor DeWine announcing that order.
We've got to get this virus under control. Wearing masks is going to make a difference. It will make a difference in what our fall looks like. What we do between now and the next several weeks will determine what our fall is like.
Andy, you led Ohio Public Radio's coverage of this mask mandate. What exactly does it do? Walk us through the order.
So at this point, what it basically says is that anybody in Ohio who's going to be going out in public must wear a mask. There are exceptions, such as, you know, if you have a medical condition, if you are doing some sort of physical activity like running around, if you are eating at a restaurant, of course, you have to take the mask off for something like that. But other than those exemptions, people who are out in public must wear masks. And as you know, Steve, and as everyone knows, this has been basically a long time coming. When DeWine announced the rules for reopening stores and restaurants, at one point he did have this kind of mandate in place and then reversed on that position 24 hours later. Now, as we see weeks later, and Ohio's in a different position where we're seeing a surge in cases, a rise in the positivity rate, the governor has decided that a mask mandate is important. He also points to the counties that are already under a mask mandate. About 60% of Ohio's population is already under a mask mandate. He says that the data shows that those counties where people are forced to wear masks, or where people are mandated to wear masks, those counties are seeing better numbers. So he says that the science is with them and that it's just time for the entire state to do this.
One other exemption that is important to the parents of young children like you and myself, that people under the age of 10 do not have to wear masks in public. I live in a very rural area, and I can tell you that mask wearing is far less common in outlying areas. Also seems to be much more controversial and political. There's no organized enforcement here, at least not that I know of. This order also contains all these exemptions that we talked about that people could really exploit if they wanted to. There are still going to be a lot of people not wearing masks.
Yeah, I'm with you, Steve. And I live in an area just sort of outside of suburban central Ohio, and I see the same kind of activity where there's less of a willingness to wear masks. And so it is sort of up in the air, and we'll have to wait and see how many people really follow this. What we do know is that there aren't really police knocking down people's doors, forcing people to wear masks. And so it's sort of still up to individuals to make that decision. What I am kind of observing, though, is that when people who are sort of on the fence of if they should wear it, if they shouldn't wear it, when they find out that it is a mandate, they tend to maybe respect that more. And they say, well, now that the governor's saying we must do it, I guess I will do it. So,
State House correspondent Andy Chow. We should also mention the fastest runner among the State House, among the downtown press corps. There was a video of you that went sort of viral this week of you chasing down defendants in the house order case. Just hightailing it across a courtyard in downtown Columbus, it looked like.
I do what I can for our listeners.
Well, you do a lot. State House correspondent Andy Chow helping us understand the federal charges against Larry Householder and how they're tied to Ohio's nuclear bailout law and also Ohio's new mask mandate that goes into effect Thursday night. Andy, take a vacation. You deserve it, man.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Okay. Take care.
On All Sides with Ann Fisher, we cover the topics that affect life in Central Ohio, from immigration to the economy to the continuing opioid crisis.
But the reality is, if you don't save someone who's overdosed, they have no opportunity to recover.
Hear thoughtful, in-depth conversations about the issues that matter now. Subscribe to the All Sides with Ann Fisher podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And that will do it for this week's Snollygoster. We'll take a break from the Snollygoster of the Week Award, and we'll be back next week along with my co-host, Mike Thompson. Thanks to our student producer, Jack Long, also our audio extraordinaire, Eric French. I'm Steve Brown, and until next week, this is Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.